Boy, I cannot wait till the green lights go out.
You've also got your cowboy boots on right now.
They're back.
When you put your race boots on today, what's the target? What do you think is achievable today? Ferraris look like they had the edge over you yesterday, but race pace looks pretty close.
Yeah, the race pace is going to be, I think, definitely a tight fought battle. But, my sights are set on the podium. I've had two here in the past. I think it'd be a good time to get the third. Third is my favorite number as well, number three. So third podium in Austin, Texas, y'all, we can do it. I'm an idiot. Thank you.
No, one last question, Daniel. You've got a really special tribute helmet.
There are fewer than 30 men in the world qualified to drive Formula One. A mere half dozen, perhaps, to win. At this moment, I'm inclined to think you're not one of them.
Know you want to.
Keep up the good work, Stephen, and there you have it. There you go.
Hello, this is Desiree for F1Weekly.com. I'm your in-depth correspondent.
Let's go. With the qualifying, Steve.
Welcome to F1Weekly.com. My name is Clark Rogers. I'm the host of the program. I'll be joined by Nasser Hamid, my co-host. This is podcast number 909, October 25th. 2021, Nasser.
Thank you, sir. I say howdy, folks. LCH and Mercedes rattled by Red Bull in their happy hunting ground. The lead now is a dozen points for the young Dutch master. And now back to Mr. Will Rogers of podcasting.
Thank you, Nasser. On today's program, the USA loves Max. Fernando made this race exciting. Danica did a good job on Sky, except for her outfit, but we'll talk about that later on in the program. We've got Gary Sloan. He's back with InThePitLane.com. And just a reminder, we need your contributions. Keep this program up on the servers. Just click on the Support F1 Weekly tab. You know you want to. Nas, welcome to the studio. How are you?
I am doing very good, sir. How are things for you on the left coast?
The left coast is exciting, but your coast was more exciting because you went to COTA. You drove down the highway one more time.
Yes, sir. First of all, great to have Formula One back in the USA. And man, what a crowd. I have been to all the races at COTA except for the first one in 2012. And I understand you were at that one, right?
Exactly. I was at the inaugural because that is the way things work in the F1 Weekly world.
Yeah, that's how the VIPs operate. They go to the first one. Well, you know, on that weekend in 2012, I had the immense pleasure of meeting some young unknowns, like a Rolling Stone, at a karting event in Las Vegas. And these young unknowns were Lance Stroll, George Russell, Charles Leclerc, and a kid by the name of Max Verstappen. Now they are all F1 stars, and one of them won the race on Sunday, and everybody loves him, and Lewis Hamilton is also very popular here, which is good. And what is really good is Formula One is now very popular in the USA, which is fantastic news. You know, they were saying that there were 140,000 spectators on race day, and this is very good because this is the kind of crowd we want for F1 to not only survive but thrive in the U.S., and I have not seen such a crowd in Austin before. It really gave me the impression of being at the Indy 500 because, you know, Indy 500 is jam-packed, and so was this place. So kudos to Mr. Epstein, boss man at COTA, for a great event, and his people who make this happen. And you know, Saturday night, there was a concert by the piano man, Mr. Billy Joel, and Sunday night concert was by Kool and the Gang. So they're doing a pretty good job there. And man, I'll tell you, I went with my nephew, and I, of course, did not have the media pass. So we walked around the track, watched the race from different parts of the track, And this is a fantastic facility. And you know, F1 crossed the pond for the first time in 2 years. And we had great Texas barbecue there. And prices were very, very interesting. And I won't touch on that. And mighty fine racing at Circuit of the Americas. The layout of this track, Mr. Rogers, in my very humble opinion, is one of the best from the mind of Herman Tilke. And the location is also very convenient, not too far from Austin. You know, some of the tracks are way out in the boonies and everybody complains. But this is very, very nice. And the run up to the first corner is like approaching, you know, when you go down the bend at Brands Hatch, place where R. Knight scored his first victory. Then we have the Suzuka style S's that is also a part of the track that is like the stadium portion at Hockenheim Ring. So my recommendation for anybody who wants to go to this track, that you will not be disappointed with a side order of Texas size medium rare steak and some onion rings. And please don't forget the KC Masterpiece barbecue sauce. Sir, there was a lot of razzmatazz, typical Americana. Did you enjoy that?
I did indeed enjoy the Americana, from the marching band to the brisket to the Wrangler-sponsored Chevrolet from 1984.
Yes, sir. Yeah, this is great. And, you know, next year we're going to have Miami Grand Prix. So things are getting very good for Formula One in the USFA. Now let's talk about Colley. Quite a show by Max to take first ever pole position in Austin for a non-Mercedes car in the hybrid era. His teammate Checo was looking good to grab pole position for the first time in his career, but access to the front row was denied to him by Max and LCH. You know, Sergio Perez holds the record for most starts without a pole position, and hopefully he can, you know, get one this year, which will be very nice. And this was pole number 7 of the season for Dr. Marcos Numero Uno. Two cars from 5 teams were in Q3, which included potty-mouth Yuki Tsunoda. His teammate Gasly has qualified in the top 10 in 14 races so far this season, but race was not very kind to him this year. And sir, it's a new track record for Haas in F1. Nikita Mazepin gave the team a century of eliminations in Q1 since they joined the grid, which is not too long ago. I think Yuki Tsunoda should join this team because he and Gunther Steiner will be a down-the-drain dream team of Formula One. Anything you liked in Colley, sir?
Well, of course, it was the usual standouts. And I have, you know what, Yuki Tsunoda is quick, and to get to Q3 is pretty good because Fernando didn't get to Q3. So I like Yuki, and eventually he'll grow out of this stage and become more like el machismo and more philosophical. But I have to admit, pole went to Perez, and I knew that LCH was going to ruin that. But when LCH took pole, he felt pretty confident. And for Max on the last lap to put it in and go 2/10 quicker, it was awesome. I mean, Max, and the worst thing, you don't want to piss Max off. It's just going to motivate him. Why did Lewis Hamilton mess around with that uphill blast in FP3 with Max, where Max had to call him an idiot and flip him off? That pissed him off. And then, as soon as that happened, I said, you know what? Max is so pissed, he's going to get pole and then some.
Yes, sir. That incident in FP3 was very interesting. And these guys mean business. And I think that they are not going to lay down and play dead for the other. That's for sure. And they're going to fight tooth and nail, as we saw in the race itself. So this is all very good, as long as it does not get totally out of control, as we have seen in the past. So now a word about Daniel Ricky Bobby. The Honey Badger did well in qualifying, putting his McLaren on the grid ahead of teammate Norris. He was even more impressive, and this I really enjoyed, when he did the his NASCAR talk about driving Dale Earnhardt Sr.'s number 3 Chevrolet, and the car itself is owned by Zach Brown, who has a very impressive collection of racing cars. Danny Boy sounded like somebody, now I'm borrowing a phrase from Sports Illustrated, from the deep end of the deep south. But it was all in good spirit and fun. Did you see his dressed on the, and they had this parade lap, how he was dressed up?
I did see that. Apparently, he is not taking any pages from the Lewis Hamilton fashion department. He's decided to go, I think he went to either Goodwill or Salvation Army and got an old tank top. I liked it. It's very classy. It's very Texas. It's very machismo. And it was hot.
Yeah, he feels so much at home here in America and especially in Texas. That's very good. I like it.
Yeah, well, since Elon moved corporate to Texas, Austin, of course, F1 Weekly has been considering moving the Palatial Studios to Texas. But we'll see what happens.
Keep me posted. You know, I like Texas, and the steak there is always good, and wide open spaces. I've always had a great time there, and I'm glad, you know, they have a Formula One race in Austin, and the track is just beautiful. The track is awesome. Really, really like the track. And, you know, it's like Laguna Seca, Brands Hatch. Why sit in the grandstand and just have one view for 2 hours? When you can move around, and there are some very, you know, the beauty, beautiful thing was they have these bridges that you cross, right? When you go to the top of the area where you cross the bridge, I was very surprised you could stand there and get a very good view of different areas of the track. From, you know, I don't know how many bridges they have, but I did, I crossed two of them, and I did stop and watch, you know, like 5-10 laps from each of the bridges. So it's a fantastic facility. I would highly, highly recommend. Now, sir, the race start. Were you surprised when Lewis Hamilton grabbed the lead? What say you?
No, because he really, Lewis Hamilton had the better start. He had the racing line. Lewis Hamilton did it. I mean, for goodness sakes, folks, he's not in a Haas. He's in a Mercedes. So it wasn't surprising. He likes that uphill battle. And Verstappen, very smartly so, stayed out of trouble because I'm telling you, it's going to be Le Professeur style that's going to win this championship. We want the cerebellum in full mode.
Yes, sir. It has to be. You have to be very smart because, you know, if one wins, the other is going to be second for the most part. And what you don't want to do is do something silly and end up like what happened at Silverstone, and that will pretty much do the job. But I must say, nice squeeze job by Max at the start, but LCH, the lucky one, grabbed the lead going into top of the hill and first turn. Just after a few laps, it was obvious they were on their own, which shouldn't surprise anyone. Respective wingmen did not have the wind under their wings. And I think this trend will continue. But I have to say, a very smart move by Perez not to challenge his teammate after getting side by side with Max coming out of the first, you know, series of corners. And the last thing Red Bull needs is Perez taking out Max Verstappen, and that is not going to go down very well. What say you?
Well, I totally agree, and Perez knows his place. A good number two is always a good number two. Ask Rubinho. And that would be the two-legged kind. No, he's a smart guy. He ran a cerebral race without water. And I have to admit, Danica Patrick was one hottie. And some of the stuff she said was pretty interesting. And she kept insisting that Lewis Hamilton finishing second wouldn't be that big of a deal. As if she had a crystal ball. So there you go. I think she got invited to Max's party because I think she likes Max.
That's good. Nice to know. And yeah, Max has been around the block as far as ladies are concerned. So, you know, let him have more samplings. Okay, Danny Rick's pass on Sainz Jr. in a Ferrari on the opening lap was very, very impressive. And Mr. Rogers, I was at that corner, obviously on the outside looking in, and it just was beautifully executed. We also had Clash of Canadians, Latifi giving a love tap to Lance and spinning him, which was kind of strange. After lap 5, top 5 were Lucky One, Max, Perez, Leclerc, Ricciardo. Now, let me ask you a question. In the early goings, when Lewis was leading, what was your idea? Will he go on and win the race, or did you have some other ideas?
Well, after a few laps, and I realized that Max is going to keep up with him. I realized that it's all strategy now. It's all tires. And really, it did come down to tires, and I was really impressed with Max. And unfortunately, I don't like tires winning championships, but tire management is a very good skill as a driver, so I respect it. And he's developed a pretty good skill in tire managing himself, Max. So it was all about managing the tires. Well, I was just impressed. It could have been much, much worse for Lewis Hamilton. I think in the end, finishing second was the best they could do. And I think Toto knew that. But on the other hand, I find interesting that Christian Horner is tongue-in-cheek saying that Mercedes found more speed out of their engine when Red Bull looked awesome at COTA.
Well, you know, for both these teams, the difference is their number one driver, and it's so obvious. But going back to the opening laps, you know, initially Lewis had a lead, a decent lead, and then Max started closing in. And I figured, you know, maybe Max will pass him. But I thought, given the tremendous run of success Lewis had at COTA, for me it was like a 50-50. And this was a... Your man, Machismo, he was one of the first, I think, to come in for change of tires on lap 8, which I thought was a little too early. And this being a 56-lap race, I was very surprised when Red Bull brought Max into the pits after only 10 laps. But obviously, they know what they're doing. His teammate, Checo, was in 2 laps later. And my initial thing was that, you know, since normally you bring in one car and keep the other one out, I really thought maybe they have some issues with the tire or, you know, something going on that they have brought in both guys before LCH. And LCH, of course, continued in the lead without these two Red Bulls chasing him. So it was like, talk about loneliness of long-distance runner. Now, were you surprised that Max was able to take the lead when they did the undercut?
No, I thought that that would be the correct procedure. It was all about the undercut. And the undercut works good here because overtaking is very, very hard at the front of the sphere. It's brutal. I mean, the only excitement we had was Fernando bickering with both alphas. I mean, it was a lot of laughs. And at the end of the race, Fernando, I think, was a little overwrought with Kimi Raikkonen thing. But it is a tough track to overtake. And the undercut was the machismo thing to do, even though, I mean, the pit stops were very, very good. Whew! It was exciting. I enjoyed this race.
Yeah, I think, you know, like they have driver of the race, they should also have a comedian of the race. I think it will always be won by Nando or Kimi for the stuff they say. The undercut gave Max a lead of over 6 seconds over Hamilton. Lewis came into his first pit stop on lap 14. Now, lap 15, Gasly radioed problem at the back of his AlphaTauri, that is, and he would retire from the race. So, which was kind of sad because he's doing a very good job. I wish he had done this job at Red Bull, but given the fact who the numero uno is, that is just not possible for anybody unless they put Lewis in that car. And we all know that's not happening. Now, obviously, Lewis came in for his second stop and Mr. Max kept his lead, so there was going to be a charge for the win. And of course, if Lewis had won the race, he would have taken the championship lead. Were you ready for some thrilling action towards the answer?
I was, but I kept thinking in my mind, because I noticed that Max, and I think he's a smart guy, was deliberately backing off, letting Hamilton burn up his tires, let Hamilton feel good that he's catching the number one machismo. And what I was thinking is, as he's getting his tires worn out and burned up, Max is saving his for the last 3 laps. And that's just what he did. When he got close, trying to get that 1 second margin for DRS, Max said, "I don't think so. ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to have my sandwich, I'm going to relax, and I'm going to keep this above 1 second. And there were a few moments where it went down to 900s, but no, Max said no. He kept just enough life in his tires, and Christian Horner said they were on the canvas, so I don't know how much was left, but it was impressive how Max really controlled those last three laps. Hamilton had no lucky chance.
Now, your man, Hombre Machismo, this is Formula One is now becoming a case of Machismo versus Massey. He is on a verbal warpath against the FIA, claiming they're out to get him. And this continued in Austin, Texas, obviously best place to pick a gunfight. Lap 16, he was passed by Kimi, and Nando complained that he went off the track to pass him. What he did not say, but I did see on the TV replay, that he gave him no room on the track. Perhaps Nando does not remember his own preaching from Parco Monza a few years ago, when he said, "You must always leave some room," which was very nicely copied by Sebastian Vettel in a press conference. Now, a few laps later, Machismo outbraked himself, went off track and passed Giovinazzi, and the law came down, give position back or get 5 second penalty. Choice is yours. Lap 20, top 5 Max, 6 second ahead of Hamilton, then Perez, Leclerc and Ricciardo. The ding-dong between Giovinazzi, this was funny though, and especially the two people involved, Giovinazzi and Fernando Alonso, this continued. And then the Italian driver was told to give position back to El Matador after going off track to stay ahead of the Alpine ace. By lap 25, LCH had cut Max's lead to less than 5 seconds. 2 laps later, he was less than 3 seconds behind. And this is when I told my nephew, you know, this race may have a new leader on the final lap. And this was getting very, very intense. Perez in third was over 10 seconds behind his teammate. Lap 30, Max dives into pit lane for another set of tires, giving lead back to LCH. At this time, the surprise of the moment for me was Yuki Tsunoda. He was not only still in the race, but in the points in ninth ahead of old man of the sea, Kimi Raikkonen. Now, when he becomes Machismo, like you said, then I'm going to start calling him Machismo-san. Now, Crofty asked Christian Horner if they had brought in Max a little too early, and he responded by saying that Max's pace was dropping and it will come down to the final laps, final 5 laps. So even they had some, you know, concerns. 20 laps to go, Lewis had a 14-second lead, but his pit stop was pending. Lap 37, LCH in and comes out. This is where it got very exciting. He came out 7.8 seconds behind Maximilian Verstappen. Came on. LCH with 5 wins in Texas, chasing the new wave and wind of change. A thrilling last few laps were guaranteed as both the drivers have utmost faith and confidence in their abilities to get the job done. And the only job they know is the business of winning. And Mr. Rogers, please be advised, winning is for winners, not lucky punks. While Lewis was trying to close in on race leader, this is what life can become. When he was trying to close in on the race leader, Max, Kimi, 2007 world champion, was trying to close in on Yuki for ninth. And Nando, double world champion, was trying to close in on Stroll, Lance Stroll for lucky 13. And then Raikkonen was given a warning for not giving way to race leader. Carlito was giving a hard chase to Ricciardo to get into top 5. There was a little bit of let's get physical, but both continued. 4.1 second was the difference for car 44 on lap 44. It was looking harum-scarum as Lewis was going, pump up the volume like only he can. This was very exciting. He had the speed and it was beginning to look like he had the time also, as he was only 3.3 seconds behind with 10 laps to go. DRS was the gift waiting for him if he could get within 1 second of the young Dutch master. Lap 50 or 56, the gap was less than 2 seconds, and that's when I thought, you know, we may have some action on final lap, whether it results in two guys crashing out or lead change, we will see. LCH was lapping faster than Max almost each and every lap, sometimes even faster than half a second a lap in the closing stages. And Mr. Martin Brundle, whose commentary and work I like and respect very much, he predicted Lewis will be within DRS range with three laps to go. And as you alluded a little earlier, Max said, no, no, no. As they say, catching is one thing and passing is another. A lot of drivers were saying this about Max when he was driving for Toro Rosso. Now he is driving a Red Bull powered by a GP1 engine. And it may just have Toto, and I repeat, may just have Toto and Lewis screaming at the end of the season. You remember that scream, right?
My favorite.
Same here. Three laps to go, LCH was still outside DRS range, 1.5 second behind. Two laps to go, gap was 1.2. Very, very exciting. Schumacher name almost made a difference in the final on the final lap, but Mick very wisely gave room to the two cars trying to win the race. Now, this on-track rivalry, Mr. Rogers, for me, is now have the same intensity as Senna and Prost, and I'm really, really loving it. And let's just hope they don't play last tango in Abu Dhabi. Are you expecting more intensity or crash bang between the two still?
Towards the end, for sure, when it becomes apparent that it's time to kill or be killed. But right now, we still have a little time.
Yeah, there is still a lot of points available. And you know, I had forgotten, we not only have five races, but there is one sprint race also left in Brazil. So there's a lot of points on the table right now. So this is not over till, you know, we get to Yas Marina. Max said after the race, and I quote, sir, this was about talking about his undercut. I was not sure it was going to work, but the last few laps were fun. A bit sideways through the high-speed corners, but super happy to hang on. End of quote. This was win number 8 of the season for him and number 18 of his career. And see, this is what I'm asking myself. If this guy is winning 8 races in a Red Bull Honda, can you imagine how many races he can win or he will win if he has a package that Lewis had 2-3 years ago? And that's a scary part. I will not be surprised if he ever gets that package that is head and shoulders above everybody else. He will do a complete Salson Blue on everyone. And I will not be surprised, now that we have so many races, that Max 1 year wins 15 Grand Prix races. And actually, I'm looking forward to it if it can happen. Now, Lewis Carl Hamilton, LCH as we call him, was gracious in defeat, saying, I quote, firstly, congratulations to Max. He did a great job today. You know, when a comment like this comes from a guy like Lewis Hamilton, you know the guy has done a tremendous, tremendous job. And he continued, it was such a tough race. I got a good start, gave it absolutely everything. But at the end of the day, they just had the upper hand this weekend, and we couldn't really have asked for more. End of quote. And at the end of lap 56, it was close, but no Havana cigar for Mr. Hamilton. And you know, all the races at COTA, including this year, Mr. Rogers, they have been won from the front row. Perez was third man on the podium. Trying to win the race over his teammate may become a hot potato or tamale, as Red Bull and Honda are racing hard to force a regime change in Formula One. What they need, Red Bull, Honda, what they need is one of their three drivers to become WMD, which stands for Weapon of Mercedes Destruction, in one of the remaining races. But of course, we don't want to see this year's great championship battle become another Adelaide or Suzuka Schmozzle. Now, as you mentioned that his, for some reason, he could not drink from his bottle if the water leaked or what happened, I don't know. And he said, and I quote, since lap one, I ran out of water, so could not drink at all. By the middle of the second stint, it was starting to get difficult. I was losing strength. It was my toughest race physically. End of quote. And rounding up the remaining point positions, they were taken by Leclerc 4th, Daniel Ricciardo 5th, Bottas 6th, Sainz 7th, Norris 8th, Tsunoda 9th, and Sebastian Vettel picked up the final point from 10th place. So, what do you say, sir, looking back on the race and the remaining championship fight?
Well, I really enjoyed the United States Grand Prix. It was great to see ABC. It was on free TV here, and their coverage was excellent. They just let Sky run with it, and it was wonderful. Wonderful, wonderful, wonderful. Yeah, the championship is exciting. I mean, what can I say? Fernando's not in it, but I'm pumped up anyway.
Yeah, and we have a two-week break, and then the circuit goes to Mexico. Can you imagine how crazy the fans will go if Perez puts the car on pole? And they say that this track, the next two tracks, Mexico and Brazil, will, because of the height of these cities, that it will favor Red Bull.
Yeah, it's going to be completely out of control. So let me put it this way. The Mexican Grand Prix is the week you want to order your in-flight burrito. It's going to be a very spicy, hot tamale.
I said, Lewis must be in San Jose. You got Roscoe going crazy there.
Exactly. I was babysitting while Lewis goes to see Hamilton.
There you go. So, yeah, that's what it is, sir. A great race, great city, great experience. So happy that my nephew, I asked my nephew, you know, he's really not into Formula One. I said, hey, what made you come this time? He said, well, you know, you've been talking about this all my life, and I thought one of these days I have to go to a race with you, so here I am. And hopefully, you know, he has a young kid. I said, you know, bring your kid to the race in Miami in May. I'm really looking forward to the Miami race. If the crowd was big in Texas, which it was, wait till we have the race in Miami. That's just going to be fantastic. Shall we take a break now, Mr. Rogers?
Not only will we take a break, but Gary Sloan is now pitching. So let's hear from Big Gary.
Hello, listeners. My name is Gary Sloan, and this is this month's edition of In the Pit Lane. So back in the day when Formula One was run by the sports ringmaster Bernie Ecclestone, betting was a dirty word, with Ecclestone believing the gambling industry would tarnish F1's image. How this squared with his love of tobacco money was always a mystery. However, when Liberty Media took control, Adam Carolla's F1's head of digital media was tasked with coming up with a strategy to make money from sports betting. Liberty realised there was two things at play. They would have to get a company to extract the data for them which would enable live betting during races. So they signed up Interregional Sports Group, ISG, on a five-year deal worth an estimated $100 million. This allowed ISG the commercial rights to sell Formula One to gambling companies. On the data side, they partnered with European tech startup Sport Radar. They would extract the data directly from the circuits, and astonishingly, they provide 1.1 million data points from the track and the cars every second. So with this information, Sports Radar are able to create 22 betting options, as well as done the usual ones. There's ones like first driver to retire, driver total overtakings, and the winning margin. Business has been good for Sport Radar, and they support more than 900 betting operators around the world. Their strategy, from ISG's point of view, was to use what's called digital replacement technology. This allows sponsors' logos to be superimposed on electronic billboards around the circuit, which means that races can be broadcast in different countries using different sponsors. This was critical, as well as there are a handful of large companies currently control the online sports betting industry. None are truly global, so the ability to advertise by region was essential to these brands. ISG is aiming to complete 7 regional sponsorship deals, starting with Asia, Europe, the Americas, then they'll look towards Russia and Latin America. Interestingly, for a sport embracing the Middle East, issues over gambling advertising means the region is a non-starter. So it's been a while since the deals were signed up, but the pieces of the jigsaw are eventually falling into place. Back in March, online bookmaker 118bet became the official Asian partner in a five-year deal worth $8 million per season. Then in July, Flutter, the holding company for a range of international brands, signed an exclusive European broadcast deal, taking them up to 2023. Although some countries are banning sports betting advertising, The recent US Supreme Court ruling striking down a federal ban on sports betting and few restrictions in markets like the UK bodes well. Liberty Media, of course, are faced with the ethical and moral questions around gambling. Well, surprise, surprise, they've decided to take the money. And much like its stance on other ethical issues, they've put forward the "we are part of the solution" argument. Ross Braun has recognised concerns around influencing minors and addiction, commenting to Reuters, "Betting is not going to go away. Betting in an unstructured, unmonitored way is far worse than doing it in a responsible and structured fashion." Well, that's all right then, Ross. What Formula One needs to be on its guard for is the dark side of sports gambling. Match fixing in football and ball tampering in cricket, to name a few, have soiled sports reputation in recent years. Sport Radar run the highly high-browed Integrity Services Division, claiming as many as 1% of the matches they monitor show suspicious betting patterns that may be indicative of match fixing. So what about Formula One? Could, for instance, a Far East betting syndicate buy a mechanic who in turn messes up a critical pit stop? Well, sadly, human nature has always shown the maxim, every man or woman has their price. More concerning, Formula One has not been without its various cheating scandals over the years, instigated at the very highest levels in the sport. No greater reminder is needed in the week that news emerges that Flavio Briatore may return to Formula One. If a team principal was prepared to instruct his driver to crash for a points advantage for his teammate, imagine what a team principal would do for the money. Well, that's it for another month. More details at GarySloan.com. Until next time, stay safe, stay well.
Thank you, Gary. Keep up the good work. The check's in the mail. So let's take a quick break, and we'll be back after this brief message.
Thanks to Kimi winning the championship, we have a finished flavor to the program today. Now we have an interview with Mika Salo, a gentleman who drove in over 100 races, Formula One races, that is, and was with the Toyota Formula One program when it started. I ran into him last weekend at the American Le Mans Series race, and it was very nice of him. He had just done a four-hour race, and darkness had fallen at Laguna Seca, but I was able to get, you know, a few minutes from him. And interestingly, Mika Salo grew up in the same neighborhood as Mika Hakkinen, and they were fierce rivals all through karting, British Formula 3, and of course both ended up in Formula 1 around the same time. So my thanks to Mika Salo. Please enjoy the interview, and we want to hear your feedback. Thank you.
Okay, I'm here with newly crowned GT2 champion Mika Salo from Finlandia. Mika, first of all, congratulations and welcome to F1 Weekly.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks.
Can we go back in time a little bit? 1999 German Grand Prix. I'm a big F1 fan. What was the feeling like leading a Formula One race in a Ferrari?
Of course, it was nice. And I knew what my job was that time, to be number two for Irvine if there's a chance that there's a situation like this. What happened? I was leading, he was second, I would have to let him by, and I did my job. And
Now, I'm a big history buff of motor racing. Do you remember what Reutemann did in Brazil many years ago in Arno? They did not listen to team orders. Did that thought ever come to your mind?
No, because I wanted to continue my Formula One career, and I keep a good contact with the Ferrari, because if I didn't do that, I'm sure it would have been my last race with the Ferrari and probably with any Formula One team.
Okay, tomorrow is final race of the F1 season, and your homeboy has a chance, Mr. Kimi Raikkonen. Your thoughts on the Formula One season?
Yeah, it's been a very strange season, and of course, a little bit boring season, to be honest, because the Ferrari and the McLaren are so far ahead of everybody else. And I think this Hamilton boy got it too easily this year. He was in a good car, and he just collected points, and they don't respect the win as much as they should. You know, I think in the Formula One points there should be extra points for winning the race. And Hamilton's been just scoring seconds and third all year, and now he's leading the championship, going in the final race.
Are you friends with Kimi Raikkonen? And if you are, does he talk when he's in private?
Yeah. He's a normal guy when he's in private, and he's a really good guy, and I'm a good friend of him. He has a good chance tomorrow, because McLaren boys, they don't really like each other, so they might take each other out, and then Kimi is a champion, so I hope it happens.
I have a great regards for Kimi. He reminds me a lot of Ronnie Peterson, the great Swedish driver. I want to go back more in time. I have seen photos of you as a young kid standing on a podium with another Mika Hakkinen. Can you tell us about your rivalry with Hakkinen in the karting days. And is it true that both of you are from the same neighborhood in Helsinki?
Yeah, we have the same street address. I used to have, our parents used to live right next to each other. We've been doing go-karts since we were 5 years old together, and we grew up together, so there's nothing much more than that.
Okay, are you still friends with him?
Yeah, I don't see him very often. He's living in France, and I live in Monaco, so I don't see him so much.
When you were racing with him in karting, was he quick in those days also?
Yeah, he was okay. Yeah, no, he was quick, of course, in the karting also. You have to be quick in every category to make it into Formula One, so they always stand out, you know, this kind of talents.
And how long was your karting career, and what is the most important thing you learned from karting that helps you when you move into single-seaters?
It's just experience. I get 2,000 races before I went to Formula Ford. So it's just a huge experience compared to the other guys who are starting from Formula Ford. I've done thousands of races already before I go there, so it's not really new for me anymore.
Last month I met your homeboy, Gigi Leto, and I asked him a question which I'll ask you also. Your country is fairly small. How come so many great drivers come from Finlandia?
I have no idea. I think only reason I can think of is that we all start very young go-karting. It was JJ, me and Häkkinen, we all started same time. We grew up very close to each other, and we were just going go-karting every day, and I think that's the reason.
A young Finnish kids, are they more interested in karting or becoming the next Hannu Mikkola?
I think more and more is going for karting now. Rally used to be huge in Finland and not track racing, so I think more and more young boys are going for karting now.
Your rivalry with Hakkinen continued to British Formula 3, where you were very successful, and then you went to racing in Japan. What made you move to Japan?
I really had no options. Häkkinen had a big sponsorship from Marlboro at that time, and I didn't have anything, so I had to basically take what I was given. So I had an offer from there, and I took it, and I went there.
And Häkkinen, I believe, was managed around that time with Rosberg. Who was guiding your career at that stage?
Yeah, I didn't really have a manager. I had a manager called Mike Greasley. He was a journalist that time, and he sort of guided me a little bit. So it was good help to have something. But somebody like Keke, with the knowledge of Formula One and being a driver himself, of course, he helped JJ and Häkkinen. So it would have been good.
Now, if I'm not mistaken, your wife is Japanese, and when the call came from Ferrari to drive Michael Schumacher's car, I think you were getting ready for a honeymoon or marriage. Can you tell us?
Yeah, I left her there, and I went. I was next 5 minutes. I was gone.
You're a lucky guy. She still loves you.
Yeah, I guess so.
Welcome back to F1Weekly.com. Clark Rogers here, your host. And now, as we spin the globe and go around the world with the Swami, the Guru himself, Nasser Hamid.
Yes, sir. You know, we have some more exciting news, and they say good things come in three. There is talk on the street and great expectations there will be a third F1 race in the US soon. New track in town will be Vegas, baby. Destination city, definitely. Epicenter of F1 excitement and passion? Probably no. Liberty Media has been working full throttle to bring the Formula One glitz and glamour to the city that thrives on it. Personally, I would rather see F1 return to Indy, but in F1 orbit, cash is king. Why go to historical venues like the Brickyard or Nürburgring when the cha-ching is eye-catching in LV? Are you a fan of a race in Las Vegas, sir?
Not at all. I'm not a Vegas fan. I don't gamble. I like a little neon in the morning, but that's about it.
Okay. Now, this is a little motorsports mantra. Since hybrid Halcyon days are almost over for Mercedes, one cannot count on this track favors one team and that track favors another team. The race in Austin proved that. According to one driver-friendly Red Bull management, they will have the advantage in Mexico City and Sao Paulo. According to them, the long straights in Saudi Arabia and Qatar will hand over the advantage to Mercedes. Given the number of wins, poles, and laps led by their love child, I am not so sure. One thing is for sure, a visit to the DNF chapel will answer all the prayers for the other driver. With 130 points still up for grabs, actually more than 130, from the remaining 5 rounds, lead of 12 points is delicious, but still far away from delivering championship-winning flavor. Time will tell in Yas Marina who will be the chef de noir. Get the Max or Hammer Time. Fans are on the edge and very, very excited. Sir, I have a question for you. Mr. Rogers, do you see a possibility of this championship decided before the final round?
The possibility exists with a DNF from Lewis Hamilton and a win from Max. It'll be pretty much over, and that's just what's going to happen.
Yeah, it can go both ways, though. I mean, one way or the other.
Nope, you know why? Karma.
There you go. Well, you know, what will really be karma is if history of the 2010 Abu Dhabi Grand Prix repeats itself, Lewis comes in for a second pit stop, comes out behind the Alpine of El Machismo, and lap after lap, he cannot get by him. Or Nando does what he did in, was it Hungary, right? Where he kept him behind for a while?
Your favorite place, yes.
Yeah, that will be karma. Yes, sir. And now we go from fake news to fake Netflix. There is no question Netflix has played a big part in bringing F1 to Main Street Americana. And credit for this goes to Sean Bratches, ex-marketing guru of Formula One, who previously worked at ESPN, the Total Sports Network. But there are always people who may not share everybody's excitement, and Max Verstappen is one of them. He is not interested in being part of Drive to Survive series. He said, and I quote, "They faked a few rivalries which they don't really exist. So I decided to not be a part of it and did not give any more interviews after that because then there is nothing you can show. I am not really a dramatic show kind of guy. I just want facts and real things to happen. All these things, the drama, is just not for me. It's not my world." End of quote. What say you, sir?
Well, I haven't watched the series because I'm still a virgin. I'm with Max on this. If they fake something, if he's uncomfortable, he doesn't have to do it. His banker told him he didn't have to do it. Now, he could participate for the grand scheme of things if Liberty asked him. But if they haven't asked him, I'd say, you know what? Leave me alone. I'm having some licorice right now.
But several other drivers have come up in favor of the Netflix series. And I have to say this, that, it, you know, everything is commercial consideration. This Netflix series, because I've received a lot of calls from people who hardly ever call me, that, hey, have you seen this and this and that? So it is taking the name to millions and millions of what they call in marketing eyeballs. So, but we'll see how it goes. But this is a change we see, courtesy of Bernie Ecclestone, because he was not interested in any social media, let alone. He probably would have told Netflix people to pay $30 million before we allow you into the pit lane. So, yeah, anything that's promoting Formula One, I'm happy. Okay, sir, now, and congratulations to you, Mr. Rogers. We have a world champion from your Shangri-La, France, MotoGP, Emilia-Romagna Grand Prix. Fabio Quartararo is the big fromage of 2021 after taking the title. Marc Marquez, the Honda man, was the race winner. Now we move on to Formula W. The all-female series was also in Austin for their doubleheader season finale. And we have a champion from this series also, actually a repeat champion. Miss Jamie Chadwick is the big sweet kidney pudding after taking the title. You know, last year they did not, the series was canceled, but she has now gone. They have two championships in this series, and both of them were won by her. So, you know, good for her. And at one time, she was in the Williams driver development program, and Claire Williams was singing her praises. I don't know if she's still there. Okay, now this, you know, talk about politics and sports. Russian teenager Irina Sidorkova, who was a pretty good, decent racer, she was unable to race due to access denied. And she said, and I quote, "I was denied a visa to the United States, although I have a status of a national interest exemption, NIE, as a professional athlete. First, I was refused by U.S. Embassy at an interview, and later nothing worked out when W Series, Formula One, and Congressman McCall's office from Texas till yesterday tried to make it work somehow. So, end of quote. And so these things happen, sad, but you know, life goes on, and Miss Irina knows that sun will come up tomorrow, even in Siberia. So hopefully, and she's already signed up for next year. So good for her. Okay, Christian Lundgaard. This young Danish talent has signed a deal to race in Indy cars next season. This year he's racing in Formula 2. And I think this is a great move, as he's a real racing talent. And with the right team, he will have the opportunity to become a big fish on this side of the pond. And you know, Nico Hülkenberg is also testing with a team, but what I read was that it was at his request that he wants to sample, because in the past he has said he does not want to do any ovals. So let's see if he will land on this side of the pond, just like Mr. Romain Grosjean. Man, I saw this news on one of the websites, and anything is possible in this world. There are claims that Flavio Briatore will be back in Formula One. Would you like to see that happen, sir?
Yes, I love Flavio. I love his glasses, his mankini. He's just a wonderful guy.
Very good, sir. Now we come to American Patrol at Williams. Good news for young American talent from Boca Raton, Florida, Logan Sargeant. He has been signed as a Williams development driver. His CV includes winning the World Karting Championship and third in European Formula 3 Championship last season. And we interviewed him some years ago when he was in karting, and I wish him well. And he's a good talent. You know, he was leading the Formula 3 Championship last year going into the final season, and he was competitive in those races, and you know, I think he collided with somebody, and championship went to Oscar Piastri from Melbourne, Australia, who is also very, very talented. Okay, sir, let's see what we have now, sir. Final analysis. 5 races to go to decide the 2021 Formula One World Champion. Stakes are at historical high. The Red Bull Charger trying to the max to topple the kingdom of Mercedes and Hamilton, reigning supreme from the dawn of hybrid era in 2014. Next round is the Mexican Grand Prix, obviously, coming in 2 weeks. The high-altitude track has seen high performances from Max, so on paper, he will have the advantage. Same can be said for the following round at Interlagos, the Brazilian Grand Prix. And for some reason, it's on my mind that we're going to have rain in the Brazilian Grand Prix. Let's see what time brings. The final 3 races may or may not be magical carpet rides for Lewis or Max. 2 of the tracks, Losail in Qatar and Street Circuit in Jeddah, Saudi Arabia, will host F1 races for the first time. Time will tell who will have the edge and come out on top. The season finale will be at Yas Marina. Last year it was Max who won the race, right, if I remember correctly?
Correct.
But LCH has been very successful here in the past. Once he tried to slow down the pace to win the championship. That was very interesting, and Mr. Paddy Lowe even had to get on the team radio. This time he will need Max speed to topple Michael Schumacher's record of 7 titles. Buckle up, folks, we're in for a wild and winning ride. As Sashmo would say, what a wonderful world. What say you, Mr. Rogers, looking back, looking forward?
Looking forward, looking back. It's just a wonderful time to be alive, Nasser. It's great to do this podcast with you and with the people. I enjoy every minute of this, and with Max this year, it's been enjoyable. You know, I've been living in misery for quite a long time, Nasser.
Yeah, I feel your pain, sir. But at least the guy, your hombre, is giving you moments of giving everybody moments of laughter. I do enjoy his comments, though, you know. The beach here was beautiful in Brazil, of all the places. You know, I want to go to his museum because he has a lot of his collection of cars. I just wonder if he has a beach chair from Brazil or that special particular beach chair. He should have that in his museum. What do you think?
Not only do they have it in their museum, but you can buy the beach chair and take one home with you, a facsimile thereof.
Oh, that's very good. And you know, like when you know this, when you go to the Matra Museum, they play the sound of Matra racing engines on a regular basis. You know what they should do at they should play like the final lap of the 2005 San Marino Grand Prix, one of the greatest wins in motor racing. And somewhere in between some of his highlights, you know, they should play that famous line from Suzuka.
Well, the famous line from Suzuka, when you use the finely crafted restroom at the museum, every time you flush, you get the scream.
Well, that's a good idea. That's a good idea.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
I just wonder if Honda will ever sponsor him in anything.
They will.
Well, if he can go back to McLaren, then maybe someday they will forget what happened at Suzuka. And you know, Sir Mr. Rogers, there is this talk, but of course, they are dropping this MGU-H, H for heat, from the, this wonderful hybrid engine technology we have now from next year. So that will make the thing cheaper, easier for new companies to come in, and most important, it will increase the sound of racing engines, so which is what I'm really looking forward to. But now there are reports that not one but two of the Volkswagen brands will enter Formula One in the next few years, Porsche and Audi. And the talk is that Porsche will go with McLaren and Audi will go with Williams and some other team, and most likely Red Bull. That wouldn't surprise me. And I was reading this report that says that Andreas Seidel, who is with McLaren now, used to work at Porsche. And I remember having a brief chat with him at the 2019 Abu Dhabi Grand Prix when they had, you know, just announced they will go with Mercedes Power next year. And I asked him as a joke, you know, I asked him, hey, did you use any of your Teutonic connections to get this deal? And very surprising, he said, yeah, I worked very hard for this deal. So, you know, coming from Porsche, Porsche is winning pedigree with McLaren in the past, winning championships with Le Professeur and Super Red, i.e. Niki Lauda. I am really, really hopeful and looking forward to Porsche coming back, and it will be great if Audi can come in. And there is already talk that Honda may come back. They've come and gone quite a few times, so coming back will not surprise me. And it will be nice, you know, because Toyota has a lot of hybrid technology now with their Le Mans program and all that. Maybe they can come back and bring Alonso back in Formula. Yeah, you know, I'll tell you, this will be very good. Toyota comes back. They got a Japanese Grand Prix at the track they own, Mount Fuji track, and that's called double karma.
That is double karma, and it's a bunch of bull manure. So, but you know what? Fernando is doing a fine job. Can't we just leave him alone? Anyway, he's going to dominate the series next year when Renault comes up with a fantastic package. On the Porsche thing, Porsche's not going to Formula One. That is the worst rumor ever. Listen, when Porsche admits that the 911 will be electrified, it's over. Once you electrify a 911, it's done. It's finito. They don't want any pistons. Mall is out the door. He's cleaned out his locker at Porsche. And Mall will not be seen for years. So, yeah, pistons are out. They're not trending. Now it's brushless electric motors. It's all about the copper, my friend.
Well, it is the future of automobile industry, and I just hope it's not the future of Formula One.
Me too.
Yes, but we're not going to be here in the year 2525, so we don't have to worry about that.
In the year 2525, Fernando continues to survive.
Yes, very true, and that brings us to Musical Mondial for this week, sir. And to celebrate the return of Formula One to the United States, here is some mighty fine piece of Americana music, which I like very, very much. It's from a movie of the same name, and the original song from Miss Peggy Lee is very, very nice. But this is a instrumental version. Thank you for listening, and please enjoy Johnny Guitar. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Good night. Thank you.